This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
When it's out with a Zvot and Parshas Vayayru, Zvot actually says in the Sefer by Siyankiv and Parshas told us, he says that Avimelech was watching Avram Avini and he wasn't so impressed with him. He figured Avram Avini, we know, was Medusa Midas HaChesed. Avram Avini Midas HaChesed, he's a good person. Somebody who's a good person, he likes to do good things. So if somebody likes to do good things and he's doing good things, that's not very impressive. Find the Gemara talks about the bird, the Hasidu bird, who's Oysa Chesed Mechavreseyu. So if it's a teva, doing good things, you know, just b'teva, that's nothing significant or respectable. And that's why the Chesed bird is the Oif Tomai. It's not even a kosher bird. Doing good things just because you want to. When Avimelech saw that Avraham Avinu was able to chase out Hogar and Yishmuel from his house and use Midas Agvira, he said, oh, so he doesn't just do good things because that's what he does. He does it when he's supposed to, when he wants to. And that's why Avimelech was impressed and said, Adakim imchu b'chal hashatu oisa. Adakim midas adin. I see that you even have that gvira in you. And it's always there. And I guess whenever you're not using it, it's because you don't want to. And he explains how by Yitzchak Avinu was the other way around. Yitzchak Avinu was midas agvira. And he didn't see in him the midas rachmonis. That's why he wasn't impressed with Yitzchak. He didn't want to have to do with him. Until he saw that... ki hoyu Hashem imachai. Later on he saw that Yitzchak Avinu had the midas achesed as well. And that's what impressed him, the midas Hashem, which is Meramez on the midah of Chesed. And then he brings from the Rabbinim of Shischa that by Avraham Avini you were able to see right away the good, but by Yitzchak Avini it took a little longer. That's why it says Ruah Ruini, it took longer. And that's just how it is with each person. They have their own way of doing things, and when somebody's doing something that's not natural for them, that's really where it becomes something worth respecting. Now, when it comes to each person with their own both personality and mindset and natural characteristics and different things, we all have things that are hard for us and we have things that are easy for us. When it comes to avodas Hashem, serving Hashem, if you do things that are hard for you, that's something worth that's significant. You know, that's very important. People deserve schar only because they're doing things that are hard for them. The things that are easy for you, okay. When somebody's doing something easy for them, so it's nice, it's very nice. But it's definitely not the same. I wrote a cipher about Shvira Sateva, and I discuss a lot of different makoiros. I bring out this point that only when a person is doing something hard for them does it really have that chshivus in Shemayim. And you can say the same thing when it comes to relationships. When somebody is naturally a very nice person, a very flexible person, then automatically, you know, you don't. It's not so noticeable, right? Because okay, so they're being nice. But when it's not so easy for you, automatically you're doing something that's much more chushev. And I can say that each person has in their own relationships the things that are hard for them, things that are easy for them, and that's what growing in benud nachalayder means. That's what growing in benish lishter means. You're doing things that are not easy for you. It's not easy for you to be patient with your spouse. It's not easy for you to talk nicely. It's not easy for you to tolerate something you don't like. It's not easy for you to work along. It's not, when something's not easy, that's when something's there. So what happens is sometimes people get stuck on doing things, you know, this thing is not easy for me, I can't do it. So I said, yeah, but it's so important to your husband, it's so important to your wife. You know what I'm already doing? I'm already doing all these other 10 things. Now, those 10 things you're doing because they're not hard for you. The one thing that somebody's asking you to overexert yourself a little bit, and it's not easy, if you can't do it, then maybe you're not really accommodating another person or making place for them. The fact that you went to the country, or the fact that you took in this thing in the house, or the fact that you spent money, that's because you wanted to do that. Where are you really going out of your way for someone else? So this is just something to always think about. It doesn't mean you always have to, you know, totally work around only what someone else wants from you. But it's important to remember that the chshivas of a person's masim have to do with how much are they really overcoming that which is difficult for them. And sometimes, interestingly, doing something hard for you could come together both in terms of benudun lamukum and benudun lachavayr. You could be doing something that's hard for you to accommodate someone and make Hashem happy at the same time. So, let me read a question over here and see what we could clarify. Okay. L'chvoid Rabbi Gruen, thank you very much for your wonderful weekly shiurim. I'm gaining a lot from your logical approach. Thank you. I come from a very nice Erlicha Babatash family. My husband, on the other hand, was brought up in a more Chassidish family. Today, my husband is Kanayna Hara Marbitz Teure, and a very, very well-respected person. In the beginning of my marriage, I wanted to please my husband and gave in to all that was asked of me, particularly in the way I dress. For example, a few examples of different things that this woman did because that's what her husband wanted, even though she wasn't brought up that way. And it's not only about the way that he dresses, but different things in the home, even though my mother didn't do these things. I feel I adapted many such things that were thrown onto me without realizing what I undertook in all these years. This is causing me now to be resentful and has a negative effect on my relationship. I cannot undo what I'm doing till now. My children are questioning why I'm doing things differently than my mother and my sisters, and if they will have to do everything I do. I don't know what my chinuch approach should be. You often discuss the idea of mine, yours, and ours. This is the area where I'm mostly confused. Can a husband implement his beliefs in his home when his wife is not okay with it? What belongs to him, to me, and to us? I would appreciate some clarity on this topic. Thank you so much. I'm waiting to hear your response. Okay. So I was tempted to address this question in my Yiddish class because it sounds like it's somewhat more of a Chassidish question, let's call it, something that might be more relevant in Chassidish homes. And the person who's writing this understands Yiddish, and I could have easily addressed this in the Yiddish shir, assuming that the people that are listening in Yiddish would probably be able to relate to more of it. But I believe it's relevant to everyone. I believe it's relevant to everyone in their own way. Again, it's always just the example, but really what's underlying is, yeah, how much could somebody impose on someone else, or how much do we have to work together, and what do I do if I got myself into something I'm not really happy with, etc. You know, it could be in terms of a coil life, it could be in terms of certain standards, it could be in terms of certain principles and things like that. I also just want to say by way of introduction that there are definitely halachic aspects to this question. Whether it's nidra mitzvah, the fact that you undertook something and you didn't do it bli neder, or if you could stop doing something, if you can't, or how much a woman has to do what her husband wants she should do. A lot of this has halachic aspects which you could talk to a Aruv about, a Moreru about, and I'm not here for that. There's definitely parts of this question that belong to get halachic guidance. I'm just clarifying that much because part of the question was, do I have to do it, or how much should a woman, husband? The part that I like to discuss is the relationship part. So the fact that I break things down sometimes into mine, yours, and ours doesn't mean that you could go run with that and now decide how you want to run your home. I just always like clarifying that part. Okay. Now, if the question is, if a husband's allowed to control and force something onto his wife, or implement something in his home which obviously pertains to her, just because that's what he wants, that's what he was brought up with, or that's what he likes to do, and things like that, very often it's not the right thing to do. If he's allowed to or not, like I said, that's not what I'm discussing. It's very often not the right thing to do. By the time you're controlling someone and making someone do something they don't want, or they're resentful about, or they feel you're not giving them a choice, it doesn't go over well. It often brings challenges, even if it's not happening right away, slowly, like you see, over some years, people get more resentful. And this happens both ways. It happens when women try to impose things on their husbands, and when husbands try to impose things on their wives. It might be more wrong if a woman is trying to impose things on her husband, like I said, just due to the dynamics of how a Yiddish shtiv is supposed to be running, but it's usually not the right thing to do. It can be very lofty ideas, very nice principles, manhugim and mesoiris and things that are very important to you, but it could be wrong to make someone do something just because you see the importance of it, or just because you're embarrassed, or you want people to see that your wife does things a certain way. And I hear this all the time. I was just recently talking to a young man who was trying to convince me the importance of a certain hanoga, a certain way of doing something, and trying to get me to understand and agree that he has every right to now make his wife do this because it's so important. I said, listen, we could discuss the topic if it's important or not. That's one discussion. If you should be making your wife do this, is another discussion. That's something that usually is not the right way to do things. In the right time and the right manner, much could be accomplished. Very many men got their wives to do things that were good proper, or things that they believed in, at least the things that they felt were better, right? And they did it carefully and slowly and the right way, and it was taken well, and everyone's growing together because of it. And same thing the other way around. Very many women have a wonderful influence on their husbands only because they did it in the right time, with the right patience, the right attitude, and things happen. People change. As a matter of fact, I mention this often, that sometimes people get stuck on, but when we got married, you said this, or you didn't say that. People change. So it's true, you have to keep your word if you said something, I think, but people change over time. So people change for the good as well, and it's just important to remember that if you're doing things the right way, you'll probably get a lot further than making people do things. Now, I don't know if in this case anyone was controlling or forcing anything yet. I'm just mentioning this because when it comes to this discussion, it's important for people to realize that even if you have that executive power to make someone do something, or because you're newly married and they're not going to resist, or because you have a manipulative way of, well, whatever it is, it's usually not the right thing to do, to do things. And it's not long-lasting, it's not taken well, etc. Now, like I said, it does make it a big difference if you agree on something in advance. When it comes to Shadichim, I'm not going to go into the topic that people get very resentful about, that a Shadchan quoted someone as saying that they will do something, won't do something, the parents decided for the son or the daughter, he said he'll do it, he said he won't do it, and then people get stuck on, well, you said you would. But in general, once something was done, it's very hard to go back on that. Once something was implemented or agreed upon, it's very hard to go back on that. On the other hand, you have to remember that people do change. People do change. You can marry someone with a certain given that you think they're going to do something for the rest of their life, and they changed after some time, and just to hold them accountable, but you said, and have them live in misery, is not always... On the other hand, to expect someone to be okay with you retracting from the you agreed on is also not good. So these are things you have to take into account. Did you agree? Should you have agreed? Did someone agree to you? Are you making someone do something? Was it agreed upon? Does somebody have a very different attitude today than they used to? And things like that. These are all things that should be taken into account before making people do things, or before not allowing people to do things, etc. In this case, it seems like... I don't know. It doesn't sound like your husband was controlling you, I don't think. And it seems like you were looking to please your husband. So the things that he was asking you to do, you did because you wanted to please him. I don't think you should regret wanting to please him, first of all. You might regret, where you're holding today because of it, but the fact that you were an idealistic young woman who's looking to please her husband, that's a wonderful thing. All women should want to please their husbands. Doesn't mean they have to do everything that their husband's asking them to do. Maybe not. Maybe you should have thought about it better. But don't regret the part that you're trying to please your husband. And don't regret the fact that you were working along and doing what you thought a good wife should be doing. I don't think that part is right. And now, like you said, the fact that it's after the fact and you already did something, it's very hard to pull back. It's very hard to pull back. As much as you're not feeling great about it, it's also important to realize that he won't feel great about, or it doesn't make so much sense sometimes to all of a sudden stop doing something which was taken for a given for a while. And I understand you don't like it, but these are things you have to realize, that after the fact it's hard to... it's hard to change things and rock the boat. But let me just discuss the topic a little bit. Without debating right or wrong, necessary or not necessary, and that's why I left out the examples. Some listeners are going to hear a certain example. Oh, this woman's doing that. That's not important. That doesn't have a source. It's fairy tales. Or who said it's even from? And other things are like, hey, but that's halacha. It doesn't matter. I don't mean to go into the details. It's always important to just understand the concept. People sometimes try avoiding interpreting correctly what is it that someone's doing. Are they doing what's considered a step in the right direction? Are they doing something that's a nice thing to do? Are they doing something that it seems that people that want to be closer to Hashem do and take upon themselves? Right? There's different things that people do that you could debate the right or wrong. You could debate if it's required or not. But we could still agree that it's a nice thing to do. Now, I'm not saying everyone should do it. I'm not saying it's good for everyone to do. I'm not saying that it won't cause problems if you do it. But just remembering, it seems that you did things for the right reason, I would say. You want to please your husband. And you believed at the time that you were doing something that's a good thing to do. And it is a good thing to do. And I don't think you have to regret doing something and decide that, who said it's a good thing to do? No, it was a good thing to do. Not every good thing to do is for everyone. But it's good to remember that when you do a good thing, you do a good thing. Somebody decides to daven in a shul where they daven a little slower and they don't talk by davening, right? It's a good thing to do. Does everyone have to daven in that shul? No. If the davening in that shul makes you resentful because now you lost your friends and you're coming home late and whatever. So I hear maybe you don't have to stay in that shul. But just remember that going to a shul that they daven a little slower or more respectfully, let's call it, not that everyone has to daven slow and they don't talk by davening, it's a good thing to do. So what happens is when people get resentful about things, they try to question the whole concept, like, who said you have to daven slow? We just say you have to daven slow. Or, what do you mean? Who said after daven the place that they don't talk by davening? As long as I don't talk by davening. You have to know what it is and don't... This is where people try to rationalize and distort things. So, if someone's doing a good thing, they're doing a good thing. Now, what happens is sometimes it turns into a frum thing of, oh, so you look down at all the people that don't daven there? Or you're looking down at all the people that don't have this frumkeit, or don't dress like you, or don't do like you. And then it becomes, again, a part of the argument of, it's not good to daven in that shul, because all the people that daven in that shul look down at all the people down the other shul, and that's much worse, because obviously Yisrael is the biggest thing. people mix and match and get very confused, and there's no reason for it. If when you were a young woman, you took upon yourself things somewhat willingly, that your sisters don't do and your mother doesn't do, you don't have to look down at them, and you don't have to realize one day that, hey, maybe I'm just silly and stupid for doing all these things. Remember, you did a good thing. And you should never regret doing a good thing. You don't have to keep on doing it, necessarily. But regretting a good thing, that's not something. The Chazal talk about it. We find in the Surah, I'm talking about Toya al Rishonis. A person should never regret doing a good thing. You did a good thing, Baruch Hashem, I did a good thing. I can't do it any longer. I don't want to do it any longer. I don't think now it's a good thing anymore. That's still fine. But if you did something good, remember what it is and don't start looking back and distorting the picture in your head. Like, maybe I was just doing something because I was naive and really it's not so good, it's not so important. And if there's enough people that are doing it anyway, then I have a choice of either looking down at everyone or agreeing that it's not necessary. I think that's wrong. And especially by the time somebody did something, right? You already did this. Especially if you know that you're, anyway, don't have much of a choice and you can't go back on it now for whatever reason. It's a shame not to enjoy it. It's a shame not to find the beauty in it. It's a shame not to... And this is what happens when people just get resentful and bitter and they're left actually doing something that they don't want to do. So they're doing it and they're not having the enjoyment in it. Now, I know enjoyment is an emotion and not always could you actually find it, but you could look for it. You could look for it. And it's a shame when people don't have that. Somebody was sharing a nice marshal about... When things are hard, and there's hardness, yoyness, you have to remember that as hard as it is, you're serving Hashem. And he gave a mashal about somebody who was serving the king, and he was dressed in this heavy uniform, and it was very hot outside. Somebody asked him, "You're not hot? Why don't you want to take off the uniform?" He said, "What do you mean? I'm serving the king. I'm serving the king." And that's how every yid should look at things, even when it's very hard, but I'm serving the king. Now, hearing that mashal, does it make us enjoy the difficulty that we encounter when we're trying to serve Hashem? Not necessarily. Does it give us chizik? Yeah, it does. It does. It's very hard. And it might always remain hard, and I may never like having to do certain things that are not comfortable, but I'm serving the king. And this is chizik that it's not the logical way of thinking, it's not the simple way of thinking, definitely not the secular way of thinking, but we push ourselves to think these things and to repeat these things and give ourselves chizik and to take chizik and to give chizik because we believe in it. So we're not waiting for it to resonate, and now I feel it and I believe in it, and I'm wondering, how could somebody not want to serve Hashem? It's so geschmack, I'm serving the king. I don't have to feel it, but I can say it enough times until I give myself the chizik of, yes, I want to do this. So if any woman, or anyone for that matter, is doing a good thing that they got themselves into for whatever reason, and they're already doing it, and you're going to do it anyway, it's a shame to keep on eating the unhappy feeling of it if you're doing it anyway. And this is something that, it's a shame that people sometimes can't enjoy what they're doing if you're doing it anyway. If you're doing it anyway, try to find the good in it and try to feel good about it. And that's what often, it just starts with acceptance, because as long as you're unsure of, should I keep on doing this or not? That's a separate story. Because if you're unsure, then how do you accept that this reality, if maybe it shouldn't be reality? And I find many times people that are struggling with difficult relationships and things like that, one of the reasons people can't accept something is because they don't want to make the decision of, yes, I'm deciding that I'm staying in this relationship. If you make that decision once and for all, you could accept the difficulties as, okay, this part might not change. Let me see what I can do about it, or let me see if I can enjoy the rest of the relationship or the rest of my life or the rest of anything. But until you make that decision, you can't accept something, you can't enjoy yourself. So I think it's important for anyone who's in such a situation, decide, are you really considering changing the way you're dressing after this many years? If you are, talk to someone about it and be responsible about it and go ahead and do what you got to do, if it's the right thing to do. But if you're not, then try to make that mental decision of, this is what I'm going to do, regardless of if I should have or I could have or I like it. I'm staying with this. Let me find the beauty in it. Let me find the beauty in it. So the two parts that I think you have to focus on after whatever I just discussed are, how is this going to affect now your Shalom Bayis and your Chinuch? The first thing is that it's always a shame when something specific affects a relationship in general, which means you're resentful over here. Now, I'm not sure exactly how this resentment came to your husband. He wanted you to do certain things and you decided you want to please him and you did it. It doesn't sound like he forced you, so just remember that part first of all. Second of all, even if he did force you 10 plus years ago, let's say, to do something you don't like doing, by the time it happened. Now, to turn this into a general thing where you start getting distant or you start getting uncomfortable or it starts affecting your marriage, it's hard, but just try to compartmentalize and realize that this is unrelated to the relationship. You could be close to someone and love someone and care for someone and know that they love you and care for you and are close to you, even if they did something wrong and even if the lasting effects of that thing that they once did wrong are still there. And it's just important to try to get to that place. Try to get to that place. It doesn't sound like he forced you into something, but in general, compartmentalizing and allowing the relationship to be close and good, even if your husband made you move to a certain place, or even if your wife didn't let you sit in Koilu, even if something happened at some point and you're still suffering the consequences of it, but it happened already. So it would be a shame to not be able to enjoy a marriage or enjoy building a home the way you should. The way it affects the chinuch of your children, there's a general idea I talk about often about not letting any shalom bayis problem affect the chinuch, or the chinuch, the shalom bayis. And it's a shame when one rolls over into the other. And even if you would be having a difficult marriage, you know, to make sure that to your children you still talk respectfully about your spouse or about your husband or whatever. But I think in this case, for sure, I mean, there's two parts of it. One is that whatever you're doing in your life, in Yiddishkeit, in terms of what you believe is right, should always be done with confidence and pride. If your children see that you're uneasy about it, and I hear these things, and you know, mommy, why are you doing this? I don't know, I'm not sure why I do it. Or mommy, how come you don't do what Bobby does? Like, listen, our family never did these things. It's just Tati wanted and whatever. You're already giving a wrong message. Forget about the shalom bayis part. You're giving a wrong message that you're not proud about what you're doing. You're not doing the right thing for the right reason, with the right attitude. It's always wrong. And in general, this famous quote of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was explaining why children went over the derech in America, because they saw their parents being Shomer Shabbos resentfully. They were krechzing, like, oh, this is what I have to do. And it didn't work. Now, you might think that, okay, so it's only about this way I'm dressing, only about this thing that I'm doing, but everything else I'm very proud of. You should know, your children pick up on this weakness of not being proud of Yiddishkeit, and it could affect them somewhere else. So that's just one thing to remember. The second thing is to have a unified front in general, that anything that you and your husband agree upon, regardless of how you agreed or how you came to that agreement, or if you like that agreement or anything else, by the time you're presenting it to children, it should be, yes, me and Tati decided to do this. Now, you don't have to decide anything, but by the time you decided, if you want to give something over, it should be done properly. Now, does that mean, I just want to end with this, does that mean that anyone who got themselves into something could never get themselves out of something? Does that mean that whoever got themselves into something must now give it over to the children even if they don't believe in it? Lav dafka. Lav dafka. I've been involved in a few situations already, and there was shiurim that I spoke about it differently because it seemed like it was dealing with somebody who couldn't handle something. Couldn't handle something. Somebody who got himself into or got herself into something that they could not handle anymore. Came a point where they couldn't handle it. It's a story that I say sometimes about, I heard this from Menachem Mandler. He used to say the story about the older shidduch, older boy and older girl, they got married. This one was from Yerushalayim, this one from Bnei Brak, and this one was in his house. They didn't wear sheitlach. He came from Yerushalayim, nobody's wearing a sheitel, they wore a tichel, and she came from a family where they did wear a sheitel. And because they had to do a shidduch, they didn't have a choice, so she agreed to not wear one. Shortly after the chasen, she couldn't handle it. Whenever she's going to her family, she's the only one that's not wearing a sheitel, she also had a place and whatever. And she started begging her husband, like, I can't handle this, you have to let me put one on. I said, what do you mean? We got married with Tzayin Agonu. No, but I don't have a choice. I can't handle it. I can't go to a simcha. I'm embarrassed. And she stayed home from one simcha, the other simcha. Slowly she started falling into a depression. She's laying in bed. She's not eating. And it came a point where he's like, what do I do now? So he went to his madrich, the one who taught him as a chusin, and he said, what do I do? I mean, she's mama's not handling. She's in bed for a week, and she's barely eating, and she's falling into a depression. She's not functioning. Until the madrich said, listen, comes a point where you don't have a choice, and you have to realize that, you know, being that she's coming from such a home and being that whatever, and so you ask her, oh, I think it's okay, and you should tell her that she could wear a sheitel. So that's what happened. He went home and he told her, listen, you could wear a sheitel, and that's all. She came back to life. She came back to life to put on a sheitel, and she started becoming a mensch all over again. And he felt very uncomfortable. Listen, we made up something. And when he goes to his family, he's embarrassed. She's the only one wearing a sheitel, and what's this thing? And it was agreed upon, and what do we do? And he wasn't handling it well. So he went back to his mother and said, what do? I have to change his back. I can't handle it. Tell them, I have an eitzah for you. I said, what's the eitzah? Stop going to simchas, and stop laying in bed, and stop eating, and fall into a depression, and she'll see that you can't handle it. She won't have a choice. She doesn't have to give in. He said, Rabbi, I can't do that. Oh, this is where the difference is. She means it, and she can't handle it, and that's why you have to give it to her, but you could handle it, you just don't like it. Anyway, my point with the story is not that this is a tactic, or that whoever can't handle something must be right. My point is that there are situations, and I've seen a few of them myself, where somebody just couldn't handle something. I was dealing with a situation where somebody was dressing a certain way, and they so couldn't handle it that they wouldn't leave the house. They wouldn't go to simcha. They wouldn't leave the house on Shabbos or Yom Tov because I can't handle being seen this way in the streets. So I'm not going to change the way I dress, but am I going out? And by the time they went for Das Torah, what do I do now? The answer was, well, if you can't get out of your house and you're homebound because of this, then it's time to give up on it. So there is such a thing where a person says, I can't. That's first of all. There's another such thing of somebody saying, listen, that's what I took upon myself. My children don't have to do this because this was thought out and discussed. And I don't think it's important for my children to do something that we don't necessarily promote or put on them. But again, these are tricky topics to know when yes and when not, especially if it's the father that's implementing a certain Mesoira or Minig, and the mother's the one that's telling the children they don't have to do it now. There's also something to think about. I've seen this in very many ways, and that's why I started off saying, you probably need some Das Torah just to know what the right thing to do is. But most of what I was discussing was that if you already did it, and you already decided this is what you're going to do, and you already realize that it is what it is, then don't let it affect your marriage, and don't let it affect your chinuch, and do it with pride, and enjoy yourself, and feel good about it, and remember that what you did was bringing you closer to Hashem. Don't deny that. Don't feel bad about it. Don't misinterpret it just because you're not feeling good. This is something I think many people could apply to their own situations where they realize, you know what, at the end of the day, it is a good thing. It's a good thing that I'm living in this community. It's a good thing that I'm living this kind of life. It's a good thing that I'm behaving a certain way. It is a good thing. I don't like it, and I'm very jealous of the people that aren't doing it, but I know I'm doing the right thing. And being that I'm here already, and it's not changing anyway, let me live it, and let me enjoy it, and let me promote it, and let me give it over. And when you're doing that, you know, you're definitely going to make you and everyone around you a lot happier. So just a short summary is that, no, husbands shouldn't be controlling and forcing things on their wives, and wives shouldn't be doing that on their husbands either. But after the fact, when something's happening already, or once something was agreed on, you know, everything should be taken appropriately and realize, you know, was there something that was discussed? Is there something that's happening anyway? Etc. Just understanding good things from bad things and remembering that a good thing is a good thing, I think that's always important, instead of, you know, distorting things just because they're not comfortable, and making sure that these kind of bumps or these kind of uncomfortable things don't affect your marriage or the chinuch of your children. And remember, like we started off with, you know, with Avraham Avinu, Yitzhak Avinu, when you're doing things that are hard for you, both in terms of your marriage, you're doing something for your husband that's hard for you, and both in terms of serving Hashem, you're doing something that's hard for you, that is where it's very good. That's where it's a real thing. A lot of things people do that aren't hard for them, they're also nice, they're also good, but this is where the avoda is. It doesn't mean that everyone has to now bend themselves out of shape and do things they can't tolerate, and everyone has to start copying what everyone else is doing, and all the good things that you see everyone doing, you have to start doing. But remember that when you understand it properly, and you come to terms with it, and you make peace with it on a personal level, that should help you process it right, and like what you're doing, and come closer to each other, and live together, Mitzvah Hashem.
You've just experienced another Torah class, brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.